This episode of the Isaka podcast is brought to you by ESET. ESET has been on the forefront of cybersecurity for over 30 years, helping businesses and people in more than 200 countries enjoy safer technology. The experts at ESET know that even with the latest cybersecurity technology, without proper training, your staff could be the biggest threat to your organization's security. You can reduce your risk of successful cyber attacks by training your employees on a regular basis. ESET makes cybersecurity training easy. Here are the top four things ESET says you should know to become a cybersecurity MVP. Number one, with password security questions, fake answers offer real security. Number two, phishing scams only work if you're not paying attention. Number three, two-factor authentication is the number one way to keep sensitive accounts safe. Number four, public Wi-Fi is just that, public. For more expert advice and cybersecurity training tips, check out ESET online at business.eset.com/isaka. Right now, you can get access to free training at business.eset.com/isaka.
You're listening to Isaka Live, a podcast dedicated to connecting you with Isaka leaders and tech industry professionals as they bring you trends, tips, and the latest news. Stay tuned as we investigate insights, provide in-depth interviews with our experts, and secure answers to your most pressing questions. Are you ready? It's time for Isaka Live.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today for Isaka Live. I'm Kristen Kessinger. I'm Director of Communications at Isaka, and I'm excited to be here today with my colleague, Dustin Brewer. He is Senior Director of Emerging Technology and Innovation at Isaka, and he'll be leading a new Isaka Live series for us on emerging technology. Each month, we'll look at a different one, starting with Internet of Things, or IoT, today. So it looks like we already have people from all over the world joining us, so we can get started. As always, please feel free to leave any comments and questions in the comments below. We'll get to as many of them as we can today. And let's get started. So Dustin, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Kristen. It's great to be here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us on LinkedIn.
All right, let's get started with the backstory of IoT. What's its history? Where did it come from? And what should we know about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the term IoT was actually coined back in 1999, believe it or not, by Kevin Ashton, who worked at Procter & Gamble. And his whole idea was he kind of just wanted to get people excited about the idea of utilizing RFID in order to track supply chain, basically. And so we kind of are starting to use that now. I mean, we see it a lot more in a lot more prevalence today, but IoT has kind of molded into something else. And basically, it really depends on who you ask as far as what your definition is of it. At Isaka, however, you know, we just came out with our IoT fundamentals course, and we define it as a device that has connectivity to the internet, as well as providing some kind of a function. So I know that that's kind of broad within itself. It is, and IoT is. So some people even think that their cell phones are considered IoT devices, and in a lot of ways they are, but we can kind of break them down into a couple of different components. The first is sensors and actuators. What do we mean by sensors and actuators? Some kind of a sensing device, right? So if we think about something really simple like a light bulb or a motion sensing light bulb, the sensor there would be the motion sensor in itself, and the actuator would be the switch to turn on the light. Right. The third kind of really important thing that kind of goes into that is the internet connectivity or some kind of connectivity. Not all IoT devices have internet connectivity, right? We have smartwatches that have Bluetooth connectivity, maybe don't have Wi-Fi, but most of the newer things actually do have that kind of connectivity. And I actually have some visuals here that we can kind of show you. So this is a smart switch or a smart outlet that I have just so gingerly taken apart here. You can tell, like, I definitely put that together. Nobody ever would ever know, right? And if we take a look on the inside here, we see a bunch of electronic things going on in there. We actually have our chipset, which is the brains of the IoT device right here that has its Wi-Fi. And then the actuator is actually right here. That's an electronic relay that actually turns the switch on. So it's a really scary thing to think about, because we'll talk a little bit later, I think, about the security concerns of IoT devices and why they're such a big issue and why there's why we talk about them so much. But really boiled down, they're just kind of tiny computers that control certain things in our physical world. And I think that's where the scariness comes in, because they do control things in our physical world, right? The other thing to mention in here as well is, most of these devices, because they are tiny computers, they do have operating systems, right? Or some form of operating system. They do have some form of middleware as well to communicate with servers or communicate with the user in order to complete whatever their task is that they need to complete. And then the connectivity part of it as well. We've had some really great things happen in the past 5, 10, 15 years when it comes to radio wave communications. We have 5G now. Bluetooth technologies are getting better. We have Z-Wave, Zigbee. We have all these new protocols as well, and all these new ways that wireless technologies can actually interface with smaller devices. And of course, we see these being used. This is a really simple example of a home device. We have these being used in our houses. We have these being used in our places of work. We have them being used in healthcare, which again, I think ups the scary factor a little bit more about what these things can control and what they can monitor. So that's kind of the background of IoT and kind of where we're at with them today and some use cases.
Great. And you alluded to this a little bit, but we first started seeing articles and hearing about IoT in about 2008. So we're coming up on about 15 years almost of having it in our lexicon. So what makes it an emerging technology today in 2021?
That's a really good question. As with most emerging technologies, they've been around for a while. So why now all of a sudden are they emerging, right? So with blockchain, technically Bitcoin's been around since 2009. That's when the white paper was kind of published on it, right? Cloud technologies, the term was first coined in 2006. We're still considering the AI. I mean, it really goes back to the 70s almost, right? So we still have all these ideas about where these things come from, but why are they now considered emerging? Really good question on all this, and I think there's a couple of different factors, and again, this kind of goes into the definition of what emerging technology is. I have another visual. Hold on one second.
Great.
So this is a Radio Shack TRS-80. I don't know if anybody out there knows what this is, but this is basically a home computer system from 1979, right? And if we open it up, because I open up all my electronic devices, we see all these, different components and everything else that goes into this. This is a 2 megahertz device, and it's got 1 kilobyte of RAM on it. In comparison to that, I also have here a Raspberry Pi. This is a 2 gigahertz device with 4 gigabytes of RAM on it. So not only have we gone from this incredibly large form factor, and are we making these kind of leaps and bounds with this kind of, silicon technology and everything every day. Also, this takes like 1/10 of the energy that monstrosity that I just showed you takes to run. So we kind of have this really interesting thing happening of consumer electronics becoming more affordable, more energy efficient, and smaller. As a matter of fact, IBM just released, I think 2 months ago, that they have a 2 nanometer chipset that they're releasing soon. 2 nanometers, just for those of you who, I had to look this up. I was like, well, that's really tiny. How small is that? 2 nanometers is the diameter of a strand of DNA.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, we're getting these things so small, which means they're going to use electricity, which means, of course, we have devices like our smartwatches, right? Which, have more processing power in spades than that other device that I just showed you. So we have these things that are getting smaller. We have them getting more efficient, and we have them getting cheaper as well. And so adoption rate's going to go up on something like that. So you could make the comparison that something like computer devices are just getting more affordable and therefore spreading more. And with that kind of comes this idea of emerging technologies. And there's a lot that goes into that as well. There's a lot that goes into this kind of new ecosystem that we see kind of being built around emerging technologies in general.
Great. So you showed us how much the devices have changed, and we talked about how long they've been around. So with all those changes, how have the security concerns changed? Are things getting better as we've had more time with these devices, or are the security concerns getting bigger as there are so many more connected devices?
So unfortunately, it's getting worse. And there's a pretty good reason for that. So in talking about, you know, all of these new and great strides that we've made with technology and components of technology, integrated circuits, programmable integrated circuits, and power sources, you know, we still have the issue of, number one, the human element, which is us, always going to be the weakest link, right, in any network or in any device. But we also are usually, these devices, to make them a little bit cheaper and a little bit more consumer friendly and affordable, you know, they're actually utilizing outdated hardware and software to run these things. So like I mentioned, these are little mini computers, right? So is it possible for someone to log into this? Is it possible for me to, you know, gain root access to this device? What, you know, what is this software actually doing on the back end? What servers is it actually talking to on the back end, right? Who is the manufacturer for this thing? So what we then kind of end up with is kind of like this Raspberry Pi. So we have this like fully functional computer. There's actually a version of Kali Linux that's available for this. And Kali is, of course, you know, utilized by pen testers and security professionals to test out the security of different networks and everything. But you can get a full version of Kali to actually run on this device. Now, I know a Raspberry Pi might be a little bit big and people might be like, that's actually a computer, not so much an IoT device. But I actually have an IoT device on my home network that is a Raspberry Pi. And how do I know that? Because I'm a nerd and I ran Nmap on my internal network and I figured it out, right? It's, yeah, I'm a nerd. So we have these devices that are utilizing these old operating systems. They're utilizing these older pieces of hardware that have known vulnerabilities on them. And the reason why we are running the older versions of operating systems is because we have the older hardware. And the reason why we have the older hardware is because it's much cheaper, because we have all these chips that were kind of sitting around and not really doing anything. And we're like, hey, we can throw this into a light switch and make it kind of work, right? So there's this outdated hardware and software thing. Now, also with these devices, when they come from the manufacturer, they have to be programmed somehow. There has to be some kind of physical access to the data on these devices. And there are many different hacking utilities or pen testing utilities that are out there to actually hack into the different devices and the different chipsets on the devices to actually take a look and kind of reverse engineer them to see what you can accomplish, right? Over-the-air updates are another big thing with IoT devices. So they might find, the manufacturer might understand, oh, there's a vulnerability here, let's run an update. But people can actually receive those updates and intercept those updates and reverse engineer the software from that standpoint. So there's a fair amount of backwards, of reverse engineering that can go on with these. The other thing that, you know, kind of important to talk about here is, you know, as we kind of go through and we talk about the security of these things, if somebody hacks into my light switch, who cares, right? They can turn my lights off and on and make me think that there's a ghost haunting my house or something, right? That's the worst case scenario. However, we are starting to see this technology being utilized in industrial systems, right? And that's industrial IoT or IIoT. Really the difference between that and kind of home consumer devices is kind of scale, right? So instead of controlling the light switch to my house, it might be controlling the pump to, you know, to the cooling tower of a nuclear power plant or something like that, in which case we don't want anybody turning that off, right? That's not supposed to be turned off. So there are some, I'm not trying to scare anybody out there, but these are things that we all need to make sure that we're taking into account as this adoption rate goes up more, right? We need to make sure that, you know, we're practicing good cyber hygiene. We have defense in depth mechanisms for those devices that we have to have, but maybe don't have the best security on them.
Yep. So I think we just got a couple of questions from Eugene. I think you answered one of them, which is what's the worst we can see with IoT. But he also asks, are there any specific standard changes happening as part of IoT?
Specific standards. Oh, okay. So yes. So actually an ISO is working currently, their SE27 section is working on IoT and working with manufacturers to try to come up with better standards for improving security, for designing these things to be secure before they even go out, right? So if we do get, you know, And providing update, you know, having that update capability, because some of these things don't have over-the-air update capabilities. And then what do you do if you have a consumer device in your house that doesn't have that, you know, that update, over-the-air update capability? So kind of building those into these things. As far as anything else, I think NIST is working on some stuff too, and I can't really think of anything else off the top of my head because I'm not a manufacturer, so I'm not sure. I'm sure there are other ones out there as well.
Great. And then we have another security related question here. How can firewalls play a role in IoT threats?
Really, really good question. Yes. So I mentioned before practicing good cyber hygiene and having defense in depth, right? So this device, let's say it plugs in, it has an open port on it. I don't have administrative access to this device. So how do I secure it, right? If we apply defense in depth principles, such as putting a firewall in front of this device, that would help, right? Multiple firewalls is even better. Of course, I'm not going to do that on my home network. Most likely, I'm not going to do that. Maybe I have it on my home network, but you know, for most consumers out there, they wouldn't have it on their home network. Practicing those principles and making sure that you have protective devices in front of your IoT devices or in front of your IoT networks is a really good practice and something that we like to see.
Okay, great. And we've talked about some of the kind of the alarming bits of IoT, but as we look to the future, what are some of the opportunities you see with IoT?
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of alluded to at the beginning this kind of new idea of how our digital lives are kind of starting to intertwine a little bit here, and especially when it comes to emerging technologies. So we have devices like IoT, but and we know they're collecting data, right? Where are they sending that data to? Well, they're kind of sending it to the cloud, right? It's being gathered in the cloud. And why is it being gathered in the cloud? So that they can create these data sets and possibly create these machine learning and AI algorithms, right? And that's something that we see a lot happening with industrial IoT as well, whereas, you know, an end user might not see an issue coming up, but if we have enough AI data or machine learning data, it might be able to alert the end user before there is an actual issue with anything going on the other end of this device. So we kind of see this conglomeration of IoT, cloud, AI, and believe it or not, there are some IoT devices that are starting to utilize blockchain technology to ensure the integrity of the data that they're sending. So we kind of are seeing this, and I've heard it referred to in our emerging technology advisory group at ISOC, I've heard it referred to as like an ecosystem. There's this new ecosystem kind of being built with all these different devices. Smart homes, smart buildings, smart cities, these are things that are starting to come up as well. You know, I wouldn't be surprised to, you know, if you're buying a brand new house that was just built, if it already had IoT devices kind of built into it already, which is a really interesting thing to think about, because you have a choice then for whether you are connected to the internet or whether you have devices that are connected to the internet or not. That's, you kind of don't anymore, right? Of course, we have 5G connectivity, but 6G is already in the process. Japan is starting to look at it and figure out how to make these communications faster, right? And of course, in becoming faster, they become more accessible and can send more data and receive more data as well. I also mentioned earlier that IBM came out with a 2-nanometer semiconductor. We see these things getting smaller and smaller, right? And of course, once you get down to a certain level, the atomic level, then all of a sudden we see some kind of funky things happening with chipsets, in which case then we see, quantum computing kind of coming into effect there. Now, quantum computing is way down the road, right? We still have a lot of time with that. But IoT is definitely one of those things that we're going to see kind of, again, within this new ecosystem, kind of start conglomerating with a lot of these other technologies. And of course, during the pandemic, we saw a lot of biofeedback stuff happen, meaning that IoT devices that measure our oxygen levels were able to actually help us know whether it was time, if you were affected by the virus, whether it was time to go to the hospital or not, or whether you were okay, right? So we have these pulse oximeters that are now kind of being built into all of our smartwatches and other wearable devices. So we're going to see a lot of stuff come up with medical as well, whereas, you know, you might be able to go see the doctor without having to go see the doctor, right? Telehealth became a big thing during the pandemic as well. But this would actually be able to send your stats to the doctor before you even needed to start the visit, or maybe it would alert you that you needed to go to the doctor before you even thought that you needed to go to the doctor. Mm. So there's a lot of really cool things coming out of IoT. I think way in the future, again, as everything gets smaller, again, we're talking about 2 nanometers, which is the size of the diameter of DNA, much smaller than red blood cells. We might actually be talking a little bit about nanotechnology here and a little bit about, you know, a little bit like nanobots. I know that's kind of a buzzword, but what the heck, I'm a future here. So we'll go ahead and use it.
Yeah. So we're getting a lot of questions, and some of them we may have to answer afterward in the comments, but we can take a couple more here. One of them is, from an audit perspective, if a company's IoT control environment is poor, could this fail an external audit?
I would say absolutely. Yeah. My view on it is that these are just tiny computers, right? Mm-hmm. If a system fails an audit, normally, would you then fail them? Yeah, you would, right? So anytime that there's any kind of... especially if it allows infill and exfill from the network, right? Because these devices, we've seen it before with ransomware, we've seen it before with some other attacks, distributed denial of service attacks, in which IoT devices are utilized as zombie nets, right, or zombie bots, to build up enough processing power to actually crash a website or to implant something. So there's a cybersecurity threat there. There's a information systems threat there as well.
Right. Okay, and another question we have is, what are your thoughts on having IoT on a separate network from your base network?
Yes. My thoughts are yes. No, that's great. I think again, with that whole idea of defense in depth, not just having a firewall, but having that on a completely different network segment than your operating technologies versus your information technologies versus everything else that's going on your network, right? Making sure that you have proper network segmentation, 100%. Yes.
Great. And one last question. Priscilla asks, will there be any future IoT compliance and risk implementation guidelines?
I'd be surprised if there wasn't. Again, as ISO kind of works on this stuff, they're a world leader when it comes to any kind of standards or compliance or just keeping everything secure, right? Especially the SC27 group. So we'll definitely see this happen. I believe, especially as industrial IoT is brought into the fold and within the United States, at least, coming up with the different legislations that are happening to ensure that our infrastructure is secure, ensure that things like Colonial Pipeline, aren't detrimental to our society. I definitely see some kind of legislation or some other guidance coming out of governments in order to ensure that if you're going to be part of our infrastructure and you're going to be utilizing IoT devices, they have to pass these tests and they have to be up to these standards of security.
Great. And my last question for you is, what is one thing you hope people take away from this conversation in terms of how to be prepared for the next phase of IoT?
Absolutely. IoT, again, ad nauseum at this point, but they're tiny computers. Try not to get overwhelmed by IoT as a technology, right? Again, they're just tiny computers. We've dealt with these for decades at this point. Where it does get scary is then we talk about scale, right? It's kind of like talking about cloud technology. It's just a computer, right? Yeah. But it's a computer that's not in my physical, not within my physical accesses. It's out there. I don't know where it's located. If I'm running a company and we go from 500 customers to 1 million customers, there's that elasticity thing that kind of happens. And the same idea kind of applies to these things. One of these is really, really easy to manage. A million of these, really, really hard to manage. And we have seen some numbers for, where IoT is going as far as implementations. And some people are saying that by 2025, we're going to have 75 billion IoT devices connected to the internet. You want to talk about scale, there's some scale for you, right? But again, try not to get overwhelmed by that. Take it the way that you take any cybersecurity problem, any information security problem, any IT audit problem, break it down into its components and secure it that way.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and answering all these questions. I do want to let everyone know, if you're interested in learning more about IoT, Isaka recently launched a Fundamentals of IoT certificate as part of our Certified and Emerging Technology Stackable certification. We'll put a link to that in the comments if you're interested. We also have a free research report called The Pulse, Emerging Technology 2021, where you can learn more about emerging tech research there. And I see Eugene just posted a question about what we think about AI, and I want to encourage all of you to tune in next month because that is the technology we will be doing a deep dive on then. So thank you all for joining. Hope you have a great day.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Isoca Live, an Isoca podcast.